Youth Sports Now presents Your Peak Performance, topics that support the well-being of your young athlete, presented by Peak Performance Physical Therapy in East Rochester.
We are back on Youth Sports Now, and it is time for Your Peak Performance, brought to you by Peak Performance Physical Therapy and Sports Training, and our good friend Mike Naparella is here. Mike, how's things going?
Doing great, Greg. How you doing?
I'm doing fine, and you know, real quick, I hear there's a new addition, if you will, to Peak Performance Physical Therapy, not necessarily an addition to the building, but an addition with one of your physical therapists.
Absolutely, yeah. Not actually a physical therapist. Our last new addition was Aaron Borsuk, who joined us back in the fall, but we've actually got a little one now. Not quite yet on staff, not hireable yet, but Mike Galassano and his wife Amanda just had a lovely baby boy, Landon, last week, and we're really happy for them, and mom and baby and dad. All are doing really well, so it's awesome.
That's great. A new parent. Of course, Mike has been on the show and has done some clinics, actually, with me out at Little League Field. So that's great. Congratulations to him. Hey, Mike, you know, we want to continue some of the conversations that we had last week from some of the parent questions that were emailed into us. And I think we want to pick up where there was a question about a 15-year-old boy, and the parents were concerned, you know, about the number of leagues that this young boy is playing in, and the question relates to how many leagues are enough when it comes to especially the wear and tear on the body of a 15-year-old. So why don't we pick it up there?
And I think that was it's a really pertinent question. More and more now, Greg, oddly enough, we see young athletes coming in the clinic who are in fact involved in more than one league at the very same time, for the very same sport. And so, you know, whether it's out of a desire for thoroughness or they just can't get enough, they love it so much, we as adults are put in that position, both as coaches and as healthcare and fitness professionals, to really try to give wise counsel and step back in the situation and think about, can you get too much of a good thing? And, you know, one of the examples I give our patients in the clinic, when we talk about getting too much of something, you can drink enough water in a short enough time, literally in one day, to kill yourself.
Right. I've actually seen that. I think it was the back of a Snapple top.
And we would look at water and say, water's good for you. It's not bad. Mm-hmm. But you can take good things and have too much of them. And we sort of talked about those things in the vein of overuse injuries, right? We can have what is a fun thing, what's a good thing, it brings joy and has all kinds of great assets to it in terms of sports participation, but you can start to get too much of it to the point you cause trouble. And so this parent's question about how much is too much is a great one. The challenge is, I don't know. We don't know. We don't have an answer that's black and white across the board, but I think there are some key points that need to be looked at. And one of them is, do we see signs that the kid really loves the sport themselves, or is it becoming a job for them?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure you've seen this in coaching circles as well.
Yep.
We see times where it almost seems like it's enough of a job that the parent has to urge and motivate and push the young athlete to participate. And once they do, that happens. And there's a lot of other things in the background there, sort of emotional, behavioral, psychologically, in terms of where is their reinforcement coming from? Where is their love? Where is their approval coming from? And if it's so tied to athletics, sometimes I think the kids and the parents don't even maybe understand that dynamic. It's
sure.
Not something out in the forefront. But in the background, what may be happening is the only time the kid ever gets a smile, the only time they ever get a pat on the back, the only time they even interact is centered around sports. And so there becomes this abstract sort of thing in the background that's at play all the time that someone can't put their finger on.
Sure.
But it's a very difficult situation, and we've got to be smart as parents and as educators and as coaches and as healthcare providers, certainly, to be mindful of, are we putting a kid in a situation of overuse? And so I'm not sure of too many situations where you should be involved in more than one league at a time.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly many of these programs, basketball and volleyball and many other sports, lacrosse, they're tournament style situations, especially when they're in the off season. And so you're not just going out and playing one game. You may be playing two or three or four games
right
in a very short time. When we think about professional athletes, baseball is a little bit different because they do have double headers.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, the pitching staff are the ones who take the biggest hit during those games, no pun intended.
Right.
and they switch them out, right? We've got multiple players to play that position. Mm-hmm. But it's a sport where it's a high power demand, a lower energy cost, standing and waiting, quick reaction, and then they get to rest again. But in a lot of the other sports that have multiple game tournament weekends, that is not at all the case. When you look at basketball and soccer and lacrosse, constant running, deceleration, change of direction, pounding, impacting, jarring. You never see the professionals play multiple games on the same day.
I couldn't even imagine a professional playing other than baseball, say, and maybe golf where they've got to play, you know, two rounds in one day. But I couldn't even imagine trying to play a basketball or a football or a hockey game back to back.
And granted, these things may be somewhat shorter sequenced games, but it's still when you stack them up on each other and then you do more than one day in a row, it can add up. And that's essentially what the environment we create for an athlete when they put them in more than one league at the same time, or in fact, when there's times when they're doing two sport leagues at the same time, which can be very difficult. It may be manageable in some situations, but it can be difficult. So if you see a kid that's sort of dragging a bit, not wanting to go play, they may be sort of showing their cards that they're doing this more for your sake, parent. They're doing this more for your sake, coach. Than they are really for themselves. They're doing it for the dream of being told this is what you got to do to be a scholarship player someday.
Right.
Even though right now you're only 10 years old, you're 12 years old. There's no need to be talking about scholarships right now.
And as we've talked, though, there's also this issue where you've got the, you know, you bring up a great point about other sports, say professional sports, where, you know, they don't play a football game back to back or a hockey game back to back. And yes, there are the few, which we talked about, baseball, you know, certainly, you know, golf, maybe even tennis with the matches. But those are all professionals. We're still dealing with kids.
Yeah. And those people are super normal humans, right? They're the ones who, if we believe in, they have the best genetics. There's some argument whether or not they really have different genetics or not. But if they have the best genetics, if they've had the best training, they have the best nutrition. They have people who are cooking for them. They're forced to take proper recovery methods. Most athletes are not doing proper recovery. They do all the right things, and yet they don't do what we're asking our young athletes to do. So I really respect this parent for asking this question. I think they've sort of already answered their question by asking it. And just knowing that they already, in the back of their mind, it sounds like, have some reservation about the idea of, should we really even be doing multiple leagues? And a kid may be very, not overzealous, but very excited about wanting to play. They just can't get enough. But we've got to manage that future so that we don't tear their body down.
Okay, so what do you do as a physical therapist and more when you have a young athlete come into peak performance? And I'm sort of combining a couple of questions here because I know there's a lot of different elements, but you've got that, you know, youngster coming into you because of a problem. And the problem could be something with repetitive motion. It could be something with improper functionality with how they're doing things. But you ask, and the answer from the parents or the athlete is, well, you know, I play in three leagues. And, you know, it's all one sport. And, you know, I have practice on Monday, Wednesday, Friday for one, Tuesday and Thursday on the other. And we play games on Saturday and Sunday. What do you do from the healthcare standpoint?
Well, and a lot of it comes down to exactly what we just said. That conversation has to be had up front with the parent. We've got to be honest. We've got to be careful of beating around the bush. But we want to be sensitive and honoring to them. Nobody's going out doing this intentionally to harm themselves as an athlete or to harm their kids that they love so dearly.
Right.
But sometimes all of our overzealousness, we can't get enough of a good thing. You open that bag of chips, you could have had just a few chips or a bowl full, but you end up eating the whole bag.
Right.
You go and have, you know, a little bit of ice cream, all of a sudden the half gallon's gone. We sometimes just start to get too much of a good thing. We start to enjoy it too much. We can't stop and we can't see the reality of what impact it may have. And I think the same thing can be true, obviously, in sports. And so we just have to step back and be honest with them. And number one, remember that these are people who love their kids and their kids who love the sport. We don't want to rob them of that joy. But we also want to be respectful of the fact that this is a human body. It can and will and has, in fact, That's why you're in my office right now. It has broken down. And if you want to enjoy this for as long as you can, you've got to sometimes manage yourself through it. And sometimes it means putting the bag of chips back in the cupboard. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it means closing up the ice cream container. You can't just have everything you want at the moment and keep satisfying yourself. Because in the long run, from a physical standpoint, your body can start to break down. And again, I think it's a great point that you made. If pros aren't doing that, and they have bodies that are
right.
have been built for this, it's their job. They spend their whole day just working on preparing to be mm-hmm. physically fit, and yet they don't do that to their bodies on a regular basis. Why do we ask our young kids to do that, and young athletes out there? Why are you doing things that the very people you want to emulate would never do to themselves
sure.
to be at their very best? Our point is oftentimes here, please go out and have fun. Sports first should be about have fun. But for those who are out there trying to get somewhere, the kid who's on modified who wants to make JV, the kid who wants to start, not ride the bench, wants to be able to participate with his team, and for those kids who really do in their heart of hearts want to go play a college sport, you better go with a body that's in shape.
Right.
It was interesting in this topic we're talking about. I was talking with a friend's daughter just a few weeks ago during break, and she's a college sport. I won't divulge who or what it is, but she plays Division II college athletics. And it was a really interesting conversation because we had this very talk about injuries and staying healthy. And she talked about how the coach even has mentioned how many kids they need to bring in every year because of how many kids are injured throughout the season, that the coach is very mindful mm-hmm. at that level of managing how many players are ready to roll at that level, because they're very well aware that a high percentage, too many, will be hurt during the season because of all that goes on, and they still got to field a team and be competitive. So even coaches are trying to manage the injury sure. situation. And obviously that can be a good and bad thing. Some of the injury situation is being produced by overzealous training or inappropriate training, mm-hmm. maybe on their part. But they're also trying to manage it and say, look, we've got to have kids who are healthy. And by numbers, we know so many are going to go down with an injury this year and not be able to play.
Well, that actually is an amazing story, because in that regard, not only does the coach have to worry about the injuries and making sure that he or she has enough players, but at the Division II or Division I level, you also got to be worried about your job as a coach.
Absolutely.
You're there to win, and let's not try to pull the wool over anybody's eye. The booster club is not going to keep you around, or the administration, if you're not winning games.
Absolutely true. And so having a healthy body, it behooves you as an athlete to have a healthy body. And we have to remember as adults, in the long run, it behooves all of us. It keeps that kid that we love so dearly happy and smiling and on the field or on the court playing and having fun doing the thing they like. It also is easy on your wallet. You're not yep. having to pay insurance co-pays and high
right.
deductibles.
Or even league fees and travel and all that stuff, too.
And all of those other things. So we just need to make sure that as adults and as young athletes, we're being responsible and not being too greedy with the things that we want to do.
Well, Mike, I think you and the folks, your team at Peak Performance, you always have good advice. But I think, one of the things that you said during this segment was the whole idea of, the star athletes that these kids want to become, they would never do these things. And you know what? I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you, and we talk every week, and we even talk, when we're not on the show. And that's hitting me like a ton of bricks, that I think that's going to be my line the next time I hear a parent say, well, he can't come to your practice because he has this or that practice, and it's the same sport. And yet we would never expect our pro athletes to ever consider something like that.
Absolutely.
Well, that's great. Mike, one of the things that we had a question about, and we touched upon it last week, but I want to ask them maybe a little bit more in depth is, we've talked about repetitive motion in the past, and we had an email from a parent regarding concerns over their daughter who wants to be a tennis player, and the constant repetitive motion, where apparently a little more knowledge from what I got from the question is that this is a talented tennis player, and she has a coach who is a high school tennis coach, but also has a private coach. So now what's happening is the concern of the parents is that she goes to the high school practice and she's doing this repetitive motion of serving, constantly serving. And then she goes to her private coach, and guess what he or she has her do? Serve. So I wouldn't even begin to imagine, and the parents did not indicate in their email to us how many serves she may do a day. But, I mean, you would never let a baseball pitcher throw, you know, 350 pitches a day. You would never let somebody in volleyball, at least I would hope not, serve 300, you know, serves a day. I have no idea how many serves this young lady is doing. But what about this repetitive motion and even the idea of two different coaches trying to teach something?
Yeah, you know, I did a little bit of looking up online in terms of early specialization. I think that both of these parents' questions, sort of, as you said, they sort of blend into each other. At the American Medical Society for Sports Medicine annual meeting in Utah a little while ago, Loyola University Health System presented a study that involved 154 youth athletes, and they looked at 92 boys and 62 girls, and they looked at them over a course of time and looked at the kids who got injured and the kids who didn't get injured. And they found some very interesting things. They looked at, you know, first of all, the kids who got injured were playing more over the week. They just had more volume. It was an average of 19.8 hours a week of athletic time versus 17 hours. The kids who were injured more, or the kids who got injured, were involved in lots of organized sport versus general play. So organized sport participation was very different from the kids who didn't get injured. And another big thing was they had this sort of early specialization score that they compiled. And the injured athletes had a much higher early specialization score than the athletes who made it through and weren't getting injured. So, again, some evidence that's pointing to this idea that although there's this old adage of you've got to have 10,000 hours to get in before you're going to be considered expert or elite, now, there's some other data out that has gone back and looked at elite athletes and tried to recalculate how many hours they actually get in. And oftentimes they're looking at it actually being 4 or 5,000, not 10,000 hours.
That's a big difference.
Because if you're trying to get 10,000 in, you calculate that out per day, per week, how many free hours a day you have, depending on when that athlete began. If they hear that, or a coach hears that and they think, boy, we've got some making up to do, don't we?
Wow, right.
And then that you could be doubling, or in some cases close to tripling, what commonly is the actual truth. Not a general adage or a philosophy, but actually gone back and looked at elite athletes and said, how many hours did they put in? And it certainly, in most cases, wasn't 10,000, and it was 4 or 5 or less. And so I think we've got to be careful of just thinking more is better. There's evidence that suggests that's not the case. Some did not put those sorts of hours in. And then when you look at the repetitive motion like this, it goes to the same thing biomechanically that we've talked about before. We're seeing this a lot with volleyball players. We see this a lot with throwers. We see it a lot in tennis athletes, particularly with an overhead serve, is that if their trunk, if their shoulder blade, if their hips and their core aren't doing the right thing, they'll swing and hit that ball. And what we find so often, Greg, is that a young athlete, they may not have perfect form, but the point is they know I've got to get the racket on that ball at a certain point in the arc, and I got to make it get over the net at a certain angle. And then they figure out, if they don't have it from here, we pull it from here. So it's that rob from Peter to pay for Paul sort of thing. And as they do that biomechanically in their body, the places that were underperforming rarely hurt. They're sort of off hiding in the closet. The body part that put its hand up and said, I'll take the hit for all of you. I'll step up to the plate. I'll do extra. So the rotator cuff, for example, in a girl like this, the labrum in a girl like this, the shoulder capsule that keeps it stable, steps up and says, you can whack me. I'll take it because my next door neighbor, the shoulder blade, doesn't want to come out and play.
Right.
The thoracic spine doesn't want to move equally. And so you take a hit. And so when you're doing a repetitive motion sport that has a really powerful ballistic movement like that, as in tennis serving, it's a real concern. So what is too much? Well, someone should be talking to this girl about how much pain she has. When you talk to people who are in sports like this, rarely will they tell you, if you really push them, that they don't have pain.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one of the first indicators that that young athlete has to be able to step back and say, do I really need to serve so often, so hard, so many times that I get to the point of being painful
right.
to get better? And in fact, coaches and parents and athletes, if you're repetitively performing while you're in pain, are you certain that the money you spent, the time you're spending, the attention and focus and the travel and all the things involved with the coaching and training that's going on, are you really reaping the benefit for all that you're putting right. into it when that body actually is broken down a bit? Wouldn't we all be better served if that young athlete would, you know, give someone a call, give us a call.
Sure.
But give someone a call and go get seen, get those underperforming areas dealt with so they can go back and participate healthy. You give me any day shorter duration, very high quality practice, I'll take that any day over long duration of kind of poor performing limited quality. Because in the long run, those high quality performances, even though maybe shorter in duration, I didn't get my 10,000 hours, I got my 4,000 hours.
Wow, that's
but it's going to perform better in the long run because you weren't dealing with a broken down body that's constantly compensating.
Wow, you know, Mike, that is we're going to have to pick that up next week on U Sports Now. Mike, real quick, phone number to call you if they want to talk about you know, a sports evaluation or coming in and seeing you.
Absolutely, we're at 585. Obviously, our area code here 218-0240, and our website is www.peakptrochester.com. You can check us out and learn more about what we do.
Great. Mike Naparella from Peak Performance Physical Therapy. When we come back, I'm going to have a little view from my dugout, which I hope isn't un-American.